Reading Cab and Yellow Cab merged, and Reading Yellow Cab was born. A lot has changed since then. The town has more than tripled in size, and so have they. Through the decades, they've served Reading with generations of trustworthy drivers, family men and women, treating their customers with the respect and professionalism they'd expect for their own families. When you need to get to or from the airport or the train station, perhaps, Reading Yellow Cab is there for you. When you need a safe ride home, need to do some shopping, or want someone to shop for you, call Reading Yellow Cab at 222-1234.
Hi, this is Kyle DeFore with the NorCal Sports Hour. Tune in every Tuesday at 6 here on KCNR 1460 for all things Warriors, Kings, A's, Giants, Niners, and Raiders, as well as all your local high school standouts. Get your NorCal Sports Fix every Tuesday at 6 on the NorCal Sports Hour here on KCNR 1460 and KCNR1460.com.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. You are joining We the People Radio with Aaron Ryan.
And Bill Cundiff.
And Bob Martin.
That's a dream team.
Exactly.
Right there.
Without any one of us, it's not We the People. It's more like We the Wounded. we're missing music or we're missing something. It requires all of us.
It takes a village.
I was going to avoid saying that.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
So, sorry we had to...
Did you hear that your whole life?
No, but I've heard it a lot since I was a grown-up.
Oh.
I was actually really good when I was a kid, unlike you, carving.
Not like what I heard.
Carving BBs out of small children.
No, let's not go there. Let's just not go there.
Let's bring that up one more time.
Yeah, let's not bring that up.
People enjoyed that.
Yeah, I didn't crash a car over a wall into somebody's yard.
Yeah, there was that.
Yeah.
Rut-row. My dad's new station wagon, the only new vehicle he's ever owned.
Yeah. And don't drive fast. Okay, Pop.
Well, it wasn't really that, but yeah, there were a lot of circumstances. But you know what? Station wagons don't fly well.
No, they don't. They're not very
aerodynamic. But you know what? They will rip through a hedge.
They land well.
I left a hole in the hedge that looked like cartoons. It was like where the body goes through and the arms are out. Yeah, it wasn't good.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did we get onto this?
I don't know. You were picking on me, and I fired back. So
yeah.
So what are we doing today? We're going to talk about wolves.
Yes, more on wolves. Actually, we have talked about this subject before. So for all the people who go, oh my Lord, they're not going to talk about wolves again. Yeah, we are. The music will be fun. You'll like that part. And bottom line is, if you eat meat, you're going to find out why your beef price is going to go through the roof if we don't deal with this situation, because we have John Williams with us, who is a, I'll read you his thing. He's an associate professor in the Department of Rangeland Resources at Oregon State University. He works as a natural resources extension agent in Wallowa County. He holds a bachelor's in animal science and a master's in agriculture and animal science. Sure, easy for you to say. And he's on there. So hopefully this is all correct. And he ranched for 15 years and has been an extension agent for like 29, I was guessing, because we had to up it from last time. The last time we had John on was the January 27th of 2013. I couldn't believe it's been that long. So he's been...
We were just talking about the possibility of having wolves at that time.
Oh, yeah. It was like they were...
We knew they were coming, but they weren't here yet.
We were talking about it, but the actual agencies were saying, we're not doing that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're here.
So he's done tons of study on how wolves affect the ranching community, a.k.a. your future beef prices. And I think you'll be surprised at some of the information. So we've posted some of it on here. We have one thing that has not been able to be published yet that I think he's going to talk to us about. Estimates of economic losses to stock growers due to the presence of wolves in northeastern Oregon.
Yeah, and it's much more than just the loss of the steer or the calf or the cow.
It goes way
beyond that.
Absolutely. So how you doing this morning, John?
Doing good.
Oh, sorry, it's afternoon. I keep forgetting. We were a morning show for like 2 years, and I can't make the transition. So where would you like to start?
Well, I thought maybe we'd just start with some of the most recent happenings in Oregon about wolves. Some of them are political and some of them are not. The first thing, or the most recent thing, is that the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife has actually delisted wolves off the Oregon Endangered Species List. And then there was a lawsuit that was filed December 31st by three environmental groups that prompted people to actually go to the legislature and get a bill that passed to codify the delisting so that it wasn't just an agency decision, but actually now an Oregon law that delisted it that would hopefully reduce the amount of litigation that goes on.
That's nice.
So now that they are delisted, does that mean they're going to have like open season on wolves? Are they going to have some kind of regulatory action on controlling their population?
That was the interesting thing is that delisting them did nothing to change the management of the wolves.
All it did was reduce the
take it off of that ESA list so that if somebody wanted to sue over whatever rules somebody wasn't following or that was perceived that they weren't following that the Endangered Species Act in Oregon could be used and that's no longer the case. Because we finished our short session in the legislature on Thursday, and I believe it was Wednesday night they finally passed that bill out, and it's on the governor's desk. Of course, it is never for sure until it's signed, but I'll make the assumption that it will be signed. It doesn't change how wolves will be managed at all. And in fact, in Oregon, as in all of California, they're still federally listed under the Oregon Endangered, or under the United States Endangered Species Act. And so they're still, considered an endangered species. In Oregon, it's west of Highway 395, which runs from Pendleton down through John Day and over to Winnemucca. So everything west of there is still federally listed, but it's no longer on the Oregon Endangered Species Act.
Well, that was screwy.
So that would make it a felony if you did accidentally kill one.
I don't know if it's a felony or not, but it's 5 years in prison and $100,000 fine.
So. Oh, yeah. Just 5 years in prison? Oh.
Money that it kind of should deter you from wanting to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I know that at the federal level there's been a lot of talk about delisting, and I'm hoping with a new administration that can be actually accomplished.
Well, it is. There was actually, a recommendation to delist. They went through the process, and that seems to just be out in Never Never Land right now. Last time they heard, it was sitting and waiting for the proper bill to be attached to in D.C. I'm never sure what that means when a politician tells me that. But.
Well, my guess is it means something that the Democrats can't blow up, something that they have to have. And so then if we can get something else on there, maybe we can kind of arm twist them to do it.
And that's probably it, yes.
But that's why they do the budget, all the omnibus at the end of the year. Unfortunately, it'd be better if it went through as individual appropriations. But, in the omnibus, sometimes you have the ability to highlight something that you can't get through otherwise. Like last year, it was Planned Parenthood and Obamacare, defunding Obamacare. They were able to force a vote on those, which isn't always the case. A lot of times they get blocked. But, yeah, it would be – how would it change what goes on in your state and, if you know, what goes on in California or any of the others? If they were not federally listed, what would be different?
In Oregon, it wouldn't be any different, and I believe so that it's the same or it will be very soon. I don't know that you've passed your California wolf plan yet, management plan.
They haven't passed the stupid wolf plan.
Sure have one on the table. And both Oregon's and California's look suspiciously like ours with some different numbers. But very, very cautious management towards making sure that these wolves will never be, go downhill in numbers. And in Oregon, the second thing that happened last year was that we met our criteria. Oregon's wolf plan management plan has three phases to it. And phase one was very, very, very restrictive. You couldn't even shoot one if it was chasing your cows. You could shoot one only if it was biting, if you actually caught them, what I call teeth in the meat. But beyond that, you couldn't shoot them and you couldn't harm them. And
what about people? Because that came up at all of our hearings about the wolf management plan down here, that what if they were going to harm people? And I know that that's been a problem in Idaho and Wyoming and all sorts of other states.
Well, in Oregon, we asked that question quite a few years ago, and the answer was you might be able to protect yourself. It wasn't clear under Oregon law, and because it says you may, it doesn't say you shall be able to. So I think in practicality, if you are in imminent danger, it's attacking someone else or you. I think the laws are able for you to go ahead and protect yourself. But if they're just looking at you, if they're close to you, if there isn't an aggression, who knows?
No teeth in the meat. Huh?
That's always one of those questions that, okay, I'm out camping and it's standing 50 feet from me and glaring at me. I couldn't tell you the answer to that. That's one of those gray areas.
My guess is that the whole world would think you were justified, but you'd spend a fortune defending yourself.
That's probably true.
To prove that?
Yes. So we are in phase two because in Oregon, that trigger number was four breeding pairs for three consecutive years, and we met that last January, a year ago, and so we automatically went into phase two. I do not know what your numbers in California are, but I know they're considerably higher than that before you would move into
they a... They don't know either. It was interesting because I had a rancher up in northeastern California who had a game warden that wanted to come on their property, and I forget what the excuse was. And after they went around and around, like, that doesn't sound legit. What do you really... Hey, you're looking for the wolves, aren't you? And the guy's like, yeah... We are. We lost track of one of them. So, so they're kind of, they've already lost track of them. They don't know what they're doing. We need to take a quick break here, and then we're going to come back and get into more of this. But that way we won't be super late on all our breaks. And I kind of forgot to tell everybody at the beginning that we air Sundays from noon to 2 Pacific here in California, and that's our live program. And then on the East Coast, we're Mondays from 1 to 3 Eastern Time on the Conservative Commandos Radio Network that airs on WNJC. They have a really interesting new thing. I'll just read you their little announcement. He says, now you can listen to the show and all the shows on the Conservative Commandos Network any time of the day from any phone just by calling 832-999-1199. And you don't have to install an app. You don't have to download anything. So if you have free minutes on your cell phone or, free long distance or whatever, and you'd like to listen to a bunch of really nice radio that's all conservative, you just, if you don't want that variety, you just kind of want to stick down that one lane, it's 832-999-1199. So it's kind of a neat thing. It's also on the front page of the website, which is wethepeopleradio.us. And we'll be right back.
You're listening to We the People on Community Talk Radio for the North State, AM 1460 KCNR.
Each Saturday at 9 o'clock, it's the Ron Largent Show, talking about Reading. And we have great community sponsors.
Russell Cleaning Services, both residential and commercial cleaning. Shasta Athletic Club, the place for fitness in Reading. Revolve Solar, save on those energy bills. And Authority Property Management, the pros in property management.
Each week we cover many interesting topics. Our goal is to inform you of what's happening. So tune in each Saturday at 9 o'clock to keep informed. The Ron Largent Show, it's the happening place.
Hi, this is Sue Blake from Powerhouse Solar. Like most people, you are probably considering how you're going to reduce your household expenses and make those dollars stretch a little further. At Powerhouse Solar, we specialize in helping people find peace in the chaos. By lowering their electric bills through solar energy, we put them back in control and help them save money. We design solar systems that lower your energy bills, give you a manageable monthly payment you can count on, and avoid the electric rate increases. If you want energy independence with a battery backup system, we do that too. Getting solar installed on your home or business is a smart way to combat rising energy bills, and choosing the superior quality of SunPower Solar is equally important. Powerhouse Solar, we're a premier dealer for SunPower. We choose to partner with SunPower because they are the strongest American solar manufacturing company with the best warranty and the most efficient solar panel in the world. Call Powerhouse Solar today at 275-5600 or learn more at powerhousesolar.com.
Getting old is never easy. Imagine what it must be like for an older animal to lose their home and be left in a kennel wondering if you'll ever know love and companionship again. At Haven Humane, older animals are hard to place but have so much to offer. If you crave unconditional love, check out the older animals and remember PAL's Fund is available to supplement the cost if you lack the funds to adopt a loving companion. PAL was an amazing deaf Dalmatian that lived the life we would wish for all of our animals. Haven continues to accept donations to PAL's Fund and continue PAL's legacy.
KCNR, 1460 AM. If we're not talking about it, it's probably not important. KCNR, 1460 AM.
Who's that I see walking in these woods? Why, it's Little Red Riding Hood. Hey there, Little Red Riding Hood. You sure are looking good. You're everything.
So wolf-like. Actually, I could still see my mother's face when they played that at the wedding reception. The first time I got married. It was a kind of a different plan. Anyway, so much for that. All right, John, where would you like us to go now?
Well, just one more little tidbit, and then would like to get started with a little discussion on some of the research we've done. But the wolf population in Oregon increased 36% this last year.
Wow.
That just came out. So it's been about 30% a year since it started. So that's another thing that you can probably figure works in California as well.
Do they have a number associated with that? Do they know how many are there now?
Well, they have the minimum number, I think, is the word that they use. So that's how many they count, and their statements are that they know they have more than that. But it's 110 in Oregon for 2015, and that's the official number. Mm-hmm. 12 packs, and a pack is defined as four adult animals that hang out together for at least 6 months. and then 11 breeding pairs, which is a breeding pair is defined as two adults with two pups that survive to December 31st. So all of those numbers are up significantly from the previous year.
And do you in Oregon, do they collar them, all of them?
Yes. The Oregon Wolf Plan states that they'll get collars in each pack and that each pack will also at least have one collar. There's two kinds of collars. One's a radio collar where you can go out on the ridge with the antenna in your hand and wander around looking for beeps. And if you, those are line of sight and probably within 5 miles of each of you. The GPS collars are the ones that upload how they can set them from 2 to 6 hours or 2 to 24 hours, to how often that the ding goes off, and it records where it's at, and then it uploads it probably once a day, and they can keep track of it that way. But there's usually one GPS collar in Oregon in a wolf pack, if they can keep up with that, and maybe one or two of the radio collars.
Because we've had a big debate down here. It's interesting. Part of the ranching community thinks it would be good if they were all collared, and then, of course, the other part's kind of like, we'd kind of rather have them not as easily tracked, I think, to see when the collar goes silent.
I'm just guessing. That's the debate that's everywhere. My opinion, knowledge is important, and knowing where they're at is important. You're caught blindsided if you don't even know they're in the country. However, I recognize that in Oregon, for instance, they've been relatively aggressive. And at year end, they had 12 wolves collared, which is about 11% of the population. Eight were, those collars tend to disperse. They like to put them on two-year-olds. They last a while, and then those are the dispersing animals. That's why it seems like every time us in Northeast Oregon are benevolent enough to send you guys a wolf, it seems to have a collar on it, at least the ones that we know about. And if it wasn't for having our collars, you would have probably been a year or a year and a half later before anybody would recognize there was wolves down there.
Yeah, that would have been our dream. The debate is always, the guys who want the collars think that they're going to be able to see in real time that they're getting near their property or that they're near their animals. Does that actually happen?
In Oregon, they have set up a system of polygons, which we in Northeast Oregon we didn't like at all. But since they were endangered species, they couldn't give us the exact point. So they set up polygons, and if a collar was uploaded and a sight was on in that polygon that you were running cows in, then you would automatically receive a text message about 6 in the morning saying that a wolf had shown to be in the polygon. The polygons were about somewhere between 5,000 and say 20,000 acres, which... So the caller goes off, takes a reading maybe at 10 o'clock in the morning, and it's in that polygon the next morning at 6, so almost 24 hours later, you're going to receive a text from the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife that there had been activity in the polygon in the area that you're ranching.
Hmm.
So, yes, some information. Good information. That's the debate among the ranchers as well. Is that really useful or is it not? And probably where it becomes most useful. Well, the dots on the map are most useful in the sense of when a depredation occurs, and the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife is trying to see if it's a confirmed wolf kill. If the collar happened to go off right on top of your animal, that helps a whole bunch.
Yeah, because you were saying it was, what, 1 out of 8 or 1 out of 7?
That have collars?
No, the kills that are attributed to wolves.
The Oakleaf study in Idaho showed 1 out of 8. So,
okay.
Yeah, if you actually find a carcass, there's probably 7 others out there that you didn't find if you're out on the range.
Yeah. That's got to be fantastic. You guys have done, for the people who obviously were not with us, like the folks in Philadelphia and all that, back in 2013, give them a little bit of background on what you guys have been studying and how long you've been doing it. Because this isn't just this isn't just an opinion thing on your part. This is really
right.
Very science-based.
So years ago, actually in 1996, when they released the wolves in Idaho across the Hell's Canyon from us. One of our prominent ranchers in the county came into my office and said, John, I need Oregon State's help. He said the worst, most destructive or disruptive thing known to the livestock industry is going to hit us in the future, and we need to get a handle on it ahead of time. And we didn't have, you know, you don't get very, very many opportunities to study something before it happens. He says, we need to get a handle on these wolves. And so at that point is when I actually started working with the cattle industry on wolves. In 2008, we finally moved it into a research project between Oregon State University, the University of Idaho, and the Agricultural Research Service. We got funding from the cattlemen to buy collars and put them on cows, and it was our goal to also get collars and put them on wolves in the same area and see if we could have interactions. And what we're trying to do is to find out what is the impact on cattle when in the presence of wolves. And so that's our big overarching question. And so we started in 2008. Anybody that's worked with collar people back then, the cost of collars was $3,000 to $4,000 a piece, and we didn't have near that much money. So we put together a guy that was retired from Micron and one of my colleagues who's very good with software and an engineer and an ag researcher and build them pretty much in the garage, and they're about $450 or $500 a piece. And then we hung 10 collars on cows on each of three ranches in Idaho, and we matched them with three ranches in Oregon, trying to look at the comparative with wolves and without wolves actions of livestock. And the second part of that, which is still to come, is that we also were taking the pre-data on the ranches in Oregon, thinking that if we know how the cattle interact on a specific ranch, but without wolves, and then if wolves actually show up in these herds, we can put collars on after they're there and see how things have changed. So it's both a comparison A against B as well as before and after. At the present time, we actually didn't put collars on very many cattle last summer because we have enough pre-data, and we have enough data for the comparative with wolves and without wolves. And so what we're doing is we're not that we want it to happen with our rancher partners here in Oregon, but if and when wolves get on cattle ranches that we've already got the before collars, we'll put those collars back on cows and we can get the before and after. And we'll just see how they work differently. Where do the cows go? Where do they don't go? How much do they move and so forth? Those are the type of questions. On the big question. So we're kind of in the middle of it, and it's only been 8 years. So this is a long-term project. But we did identify that it was an adaptive management project. And that meant that every year we met with advisory committees or when we needed to talk to them about what we had found and ask them the questions, is there something that we can do in the short run? I call it more of a master's thesis, something you might learn in 1 to 2 years. And the thing that came out emphatically was we need to find out how the temperament changes in these wolves or in the cattle, around wolves. And because the ranchers were telling us that there was a distinct difference in the temperament changes. So we tried to put that project together.
Hey, John, before we go into that, let's take another quick break. And I also want to let people know that on the webpage for today, where it says wolf-cattle interaction study, just down a little bit, there's a link at OregonState.edu, content, wolf and cattle interactions. And that has the video of this. You can see these little dots move around, the dots that are wolves and the dots that are cattle. It's really interesting. And for those people that still think, well, it's no big deal, the wolves probably don't bother them that much,
I would really encourage you to go take a look at that. And if you have friends that still think wolves are magical, whatever, you know, that whole thing, go, especially the animal rights people. I can never figure out how the animal rights people don't get involved in this. They, you can see the stress. I mean, you're just watching dots move around, but you can see the panic and the running. So we'll come back to that. But in the break, if you want to take a look at it, you can go to wethepeopleradio.us, scroll down, and look at Wolf-Cattle Interaction Study. We'll be back with John Williams from Oregon State University in just a couple minutes.
Listening to We the People on Community Talk Radio for the North State, AM 1460, KCNR.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Dandelion. Unique gifts and clothing is the hot spot in Reading for all things fashion. Dandelion carries an amazing selection of Brighton jewelry, all the latest clothing lines, and every woman's favorite secret weapon, Spanx. Shop wonderful gifts in all price ranges and receive the best service in town. Check out Dandelion at 1322 Pine Street in the heart of downtown Reading. Dandelion.
NorCal Limousine Services is a family-owned business right here in Reading. We offer beautiful limousines and sedans with rates starting as low as $55 per hour. Do you have kids? We have amazing birthday packages for as low as $150. Sure, they can jump around all day or enjoy a memorable birthday they will talk about for years to come with NorCal Limousine. Driving to any of the major airports from Reading can be a drag. Ride with us in style and avoid the long drive and parking fees. We service the Sacramento and San Francisco airports as well as all the cruise lines.
Hello, my name is Jamie, the owner of NorCal Limousine, and I have over 14 years in experience in the limousine industry. I know how to treat you right and will always be discreet. If you have never rented a limo before, you should give us a call at 276-8851. It's more affordable than you think and a whole lot more fun than driving yourself.
Like our Facebook, check out our Yelp reviews, and mention KCNR for additional savings. That's NorCal Limousine at 276-8851 or NorCalLimo.com. TCP 31143.
KCNR, 1460 AM, the most local programming in Northern California.
And we know why you won't hear him anymore. So the wolves ate him. So, welcome. Oh, was that? Did that blow the ending?
Yeah, that did.
Sorry. Sorry, spoiler alert. Hey, so you're listening to We the People Radio. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. And we're here with John Williams from Oregon State University, and we're talking about wolves. And for those people who are just tuning in thinking, wolves, schmolves, they don't have anything to do with me. Hey, if you eat meat, guess what? This is all about your ranching community, which is, I know this is going to be a big news flash for some folks, but that's where your meat comes from.
It does?
I know. Go figure.
I thought
huh?
It came from the grocery
store.
Comes
from Safeway, right?
Yeah.
So this has a huge effect on cost, and we're going to get to that in this program because that's a huge factor. But go back to the interaction study, John, because that is really, I think that kind of shuts people up, I guess, the folks that don't think it's hurting the cattle.
Sure. Well, it's interesting. I guess I need to give credit where credit is due. I'm an extension agent, okay? I am an associate professor, but I'm an extension county agent, what people used to know for us. And I'm not necessarily that consummate researcher. And the people that are the primary researchers are Doug Johnson, who's from Oregon State University, is retired, and Larry Larson, who's from Oregon State at Eastern Oregon, is retired, and then Pat Clark, who's the Agricultural Research Service researcher over in Idaho, and Tyann Rowland, who's another extension agent over on the side of the place that has wolves. So I just wanted to make sure those people, you know, at least get recognized that it's a big group of people working on this. We were talking about getting the collars on the cattle, and we put them on before they leave in the spring. The ranchers agree to put them on, and then we don't get any downloads until they come in the fall and we take the collars off and take the SD card out and download it, just like it comes out of your camera. And we also were going to get these collars on wolves, and we had no idea just how difficult it was going to be to get permission to get collars on an endangered species. And both biologically difficult, because wolves are hard to catch, but also politically and getting the permission and getting the permission at the right time and having the right information. So we've actually gotten one very good set of data from a wolf. And we recognize that it is one wolf, and he was one wolf in a pack of 12 wolves. So when you look at some of those videos, you may see cattle scurrying around, or the little dots scurrying around, which are the light-colored dots. And the red dot is not close to it if you get into the 2009 videos. And that may well be that it's something else, but it also could be one of those other 12 wolves. But we did try to come up with a novel way of displaying our data. Nobody wants to, you know, sit and look at table after table, and we came up with this idea of, well, let's make a, you know, animated video out of it. And so those are posted there, and they are compelling. There's some things you'll see is a wolf tends to sit a lot. He will sit and he'll go back to one spot on a regular basis, or two spots. And sometimes he'll go through that herd of cows and recognize that those 10 collars is representing 350 cow herd. So again, a lot of cows out there that don't have collars on them as well. So we were trying to get an interaction between our collars and between our wolf. And in that time frame of the summer to see what we could learn. And sometimes we saw that the wolf goes through those cows and they don't even seem to lift their head. And sometimes it goes through and chaos occurs. And so that's one of those research questions that hopefully I live long enough that somebody finds the reason for that. But it isn't every time a wolf comes through your cows that there's a significant impact. That's one thing I want to point out.
That's very odd.
Well, that part was weird, but we saw that with our sheep. We used to see that with our sheep. You know, the coyotes would come and they'd kind of hang out and just look at them, and the sheep would sort of go about their day, and
they're not very smart, coyotes would
move in a little bit. And so do you think the cows do that too?
Oh, yeah. There's got to be some action or some noise that we're not hearing that's different that the cows pick up on or the sheep pick up on. And they seem to not, you know, note that, well, that's not a threat today. But that changes also after you... after you've been a cow that's had a very bad experience with a wolf, and that's what the ranchers were telling us, is that the demeanor of these cows changed drastically, and that we, you know, ask us if we could put science to that. So we took 50 cows out of the ranch that was being hit the hardest. Actually, it's a good sized ranch, 28 wolves on his place. In that year of 2009, and really, he lost approaching well, over 60 calves. I think it was around 10 or 12 cows and some yearlings as well. And so it was a very heavily impacted herd of cows, let's say that. And we asked for the help of the East Nordic Nag Experiment Station, and we took 50 of those cows in the fall after they'd been gathered and sent them over to Burns where there were no wolves, and we mixed them in with 50 cows from the experiment station where they hadn't had any experience at all, and we ran them together for 50 days to try to get some sort of, you know, equality between the management, at least in the short term. And once a week, they ran those cows through the chute just to get them all familiarized with what would happen there. After 50 days, we took them in one morning and ran them through the chute and put a thermistor in their bodies, and you know, so that we could keep track of body temperature, and took a blood cortisol level. Basically, took a blood sample, and when an animal or a warm-blooded person is scared, the cortisol level goes up in blood just instantaneously. And then we did what's called a temperament score, and that was a chute score, which if you've ever worked livestock, if you put a cow in the chute and squeeze her down, some cows will just stand there, and that'd be a one, and some cows never quit fighting. They're just fighting until you open the gate. That'd be a five. And then you opened the gate, and they had an electronic eye out in front to see how quickly they exited. And, you know, some of them hadn't hit the ground for a while, and the others wander out. So you put those two scores together, and you get a temperament score of just how much, you know, how agitated is a cow. We took them back, put them in their pen together, and they were split into three pens or four pens, I don't remember which, with some of wolves, you know, some wolf cows and what we called the con cows, ones that had never been around wolves, in each pen. And then we turned on a wolf howl box, so that there was a wolf howling in relatively close, similar area. We took large dogs, German Shepherd type dogs, and walked them up and down the alley in front of the feed bunks. We took wolf urine and put it in an absorbent material and hung it on the fence so that there would be both dull smell, sight, and sound occurring. Did that for 20 minutes. Then we ran them back through the chute. And there was a statistically valid difference on every one of those things that we were testing. And so we basically proved what the cowboys were telling us, which science does a lot, by the way. The cowboys come in and tell us what's happening, and then we try to identify if that can be scientifically documented. And we did. We found that the body temperature went up on the wolf cows, and it didn't on the con cows, the cows that had never been around wolves. And the same thing happened with the blood cortisol level was significantly different. Shot up in the wolf cows and didn't in the others. And then the temperament score is interesting. You run these cows through the chute, and then you take them back and you do something to them for 20 minutes, and then you take them running through the chute. The cows get tired. So the temperament score, interestingly, didn't go up on the cows that were with wolves. They stayed the same, but the temperament score from the other cows went down. They were tired, and they didn't fight near as much. They weren't as agitated. So statistically valid differences, that's been published in the Journal of Animal Science already, and it's out there. And the key to that, the reason that's important is you can then go to the rest of the other published research, and when body temperature goes up and blood cortisol level goes up and your temperament changes, there's an impact to your production. And we can get into that, you know, in the future here a little bit. But your conception rate goes down, your weaning weight goes down, your body condition score goes down. Those are physiological changes that occur when you have a increase in the agitation of these cattle. Another significant issue is that ranchers that live in canyons use dogs a lot to help move the livestock, and And once you start with too many wolves interactions out there, then you have to quit using your dogs, because all the cows want to do is turn and fight the cows, fight the dogs when you try to use them. So significant issues. Another one I call it the master's research, but very important in identifying that these temperament changes on these livestock.
It's amazing how there are so many changes that people don't really think of when you introduce a predator of this type. When we come back, could you let us know how this would differ from, say, a large, you know, coyote population in an area? I kind of think I know the answer, but I'd rather hear yours. Anyway, we will be right back. We're talking to John Williams from Oregon State University, chatting about wolves and their impact on ranching and cattle, and ultimately your ability to get beef and afford it. Oh, you're going to like this song, I think. Sounds kind of funny.
The cattle are prowling, the coyotes are howling, way out where the dog is bawling. Where spurs are a-jingling, a cowboy is singing this lonesome cattle call.
You're listening to We the People on AM 1460, KCNR.
Wellgate Sports Club has dedicated themselves to creating an environment that supports your personal goals, whatever they may be. That's because Wellgate Sports Club is more than just a gym. Wellgate is Reading's first premier sports club with the staff, programs, and 23,000 square foot facility designed to give you an exceptional experience every day. Now it's never been easier to take advantage of incredible amenities, including Reading's only indoor saltwater pool, outdoor jacuzzi, sauna, luxury towel service, and over 130 exercise classes designed from beginners to experts. For a limited time, you can become a member of Wellgate Sports Club with no enrollment fee. That's a $99 value. In addition, Wellgate Sports Club will provide you with 3 personal training sessions and a nutrition consultation absolutely free. That's another $225 value. There's never been a better time or a better place to get started. Call 768-1205 today for your personal tour. Or stop by 1740 Eureka Way, and don't forget to visit online at WellgateSportsClub.com. Wellgate Sports Club, where you'll experience exceptional every day.
Hi, I'm Cody Titus with Properties by Merit. Whether you're buying or selling a home, you can count on me to get the best results. Not only do I represent both residential and land, but I also specialize in rural properties and ranches. At Properties by Merit, we help your real estate dreams become a reality. Call or text me today, Cody Titus, at 209-0721.
Properties by Merit is California Corporation licensed by the California Bureau of Real Estate. California BRE license number 019-45816.
Slow down. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage, and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
National news with a local view. KCNR, 1460 AM.
Probably. How unfortunate.
Hey, John, I want to back up just a little bit. Earlier when you were talking about collaring these animals, did you say that the wolf collars have the SD chips in them? Or was that just the cow collars?
Well, they both have them in it. So our wolf collars just have the SD card, just like you put in your
right
camera, you know. And we actually had to we had to get back the collar off the wolf as well to get our data.
So my question there is, well, actually two questions. One is, you have to catch the wolf to get the information out off the card, which I'm not sure how difficult that is. That sounds like it would be quite a chore. And I think the wolf, every time you did that, would probably get a little smarter on how not to get caught. And what is the change in the temperament of the wolf after he's continually being handled by people?
Continually being handled. He was caught once and had the collar put on him.
Okay.
And we actually have these collars going off on the wolf once every 15 minutes. And we have the collar going off with the cows once every 5 minutes.
All right.
And the reason for that is all about battery life. Now, we knew we were going to get those cow collars back in the fall after 6 to 8 months. On the wolf, we didn't know whether it might be 2 to 3 years before we would get our wolf collar back.
Okay, all right.
And so we set it up so it would have 3 years of battery life. You can call it fortunately or unfortunately, whatever. The first winter, that wolf got in trouble. And we get our collar back. He wasn't caught the second time, he was killed.
Okay.
And so we went and gathered the collar after he'd been shot. So,
well, aren't the wolf collars like a radio collar so that way they can track them? Or do they get the data at the end?
If you're talking the state collars, there are two kinds of collars. There's a radio collar that I talked about that's line of sight and about up to about 5 miles out, and you go out with an antenna and you wander around until you hear a beep, and then you can find where he's at. And there's no recording or anything. That's just it emits a radio signal that you can go find the wolf. The GPS collars is what everybody hears about. It has an SD card in it. It downloads it and stores that data on the wolf, and then however often they have it set. In Oregon, it's once every 24 hours. The satellite goes down and connects with the collar and uploads the last 24 hours worth of data. And so they have it in about a 24-hour time frame.
Oh, okay.
The type of wolf collar that we use for our research doesn't have the capability to upload it. It does, but your battery life can get questionable, and so we don't use it.
Mm, okay, that makes sense. Well, because I know that I can't remember if it was you had said that or someone else, but when they handle the wolves to change the batteries and as an ongoing basis, they become really familiar with people, and that presents a real risk to humans.
Well, there's a couple of things going on there. One is, like when the first wolves were turned out, of course, they'd been habituated to being in pens and hauled around and so forth, so they had pretty much little to no fear. But on the other side, though, then after they're turned out, they're covered and protected by the Endangered Species Act and by the various wolf plans. And here in Oregon, and the wolves you have in California, there's nothing humans can do to hurt them legally.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, they have no need to learn to fear humans. And so it isn't just those with collars on them. None of the wolves tend to have any knowledge that a human is a harmful to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so which isn't so good for us.
Our data shows in Willamette County that wolves will come right within, come into the corral next to the barn, which is next to the house. And we've actually had a kill that's almost that close to a house. So,
yikes.
One of the things we looked at, and other little kind of what can you glean from your data, we looked at the wolf data that we had and said, how do the number of dots on the landscape compare to the presence of houses? And so with our data, we calculated it, and it was a straight line. There was There was nothing we could find in our data that showed that the presence of a house changed at all where a wolf went on the landscape.
Well, that's comforting for the people who live out in a rural area.
Well, it kind of calls into question that we need to take a further look at, well, get them in close to your houses and they'll be safe.
Yeah, well, and that they're not a danger. That's the big thing is they are a danger.
Our data is not showing that. So.
Nice. We're going to come back. We're going to learn a lot more about your data, and we're going to get into the cost figures associated with this, which I think people find very illuminating. You're listening to We the People Radio. You can find us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
KCNR, Shasta Redding.
And stop trading barbs with each other and, you know, and act professionally and act like politicians.
Buzz Herrera says other first ladies should strive to emulate Nancy Reagan.
We are very sorry about she's gone, you know. And actually, I wish some other first lady so keep in mind how she was and who she was.
Nancy Reagan died today at her home in Los Angeles. She was 94. The economy will take center stage tonight when Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders debate one another in Flint, Michigan, a struggling city with drinking water tainted by lead. The Democratic candidates are facing off just 2 days before Michigan's presidential primary. Donald Trump has arrived at the Cadillac Championship by helicopter. It's not a formal campaign event. The Republican presidential hopeful owns the golf course in Doral, Florida, where the World Golf Championships tournament is being played. He's expected to present the winner's trophy when the final round is complete. Egypt says members of the Muslim Brotherhood trained in the Gaza Strip by the Palestinian militant group Hamas carried out a bombing that killed the country's chief prosecutor in Cairo last year. Egypt's interior minister says 14 people have been detained in connection with the killing last June and that there will be measures taken against Hamas. Syria's state-run news agency says rocket and mortar shells struck a government-controlled neighborhood in the northern city of Aleppo, killing 13 civilians and wounding 40 people. More on these stories at townhall.com.
There is one important thing you can do to help ensure having a good day, and that's getting a good night's sleep the night before. One company has set out to make this possible. It's Boll & Branch. They've reinvented sheets and bedding with the sole purpose of making your nighttime rest more comfortable than ever. This is a company I want you to discover. Their bedding is so soft it will be the new standard of comfort you'll measure everything else by. You can only get these products in one place, BollAndBranch.com, where you know you're paying for quality sheets and not department store overhead. You're getting amazingly luxurious sheets for a couple $100. Go to Boll, that's B-O-L-L, and branch.com. Plus, they'll let you try them risk-free for 30 days. And it gets even better. Go to BollAndBranch.com today for 20% off your entire order. Sheets, towels, blankets, duvet covers, everything. Plus free shipping. And all their products come beautifully packaged in their signature boxes. So go to BollAndBranch.com today for 20% off your entire order. And use the promo code HUGH. BollAndBranch.com. Promo code HUGH.
The Navy is giving another chance to thousands of sailors who otherwise would be kicked out for repeatedly failing their physical fitness test because they exceeded body fat limits.
The service branch loosened its body fat restrictions in January and is allowing those who fail their exams three or more times to get one more opportunity to be tested this spring under the more lenient guidelines. The Navy said it has been losing too many talented sailors. Some were resorting to liposuction, diet pills, and other measures to save their careers. Patrick Foss reporting.
The man who found a wing fragment from Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 in July says he's found another item in nearly the same spot on a French island in the Indian Ocean. He tells the Associated Press that he found an unidentified gray item with a blue border on Thursday and turned it over to authorities on the island of La Reunion. The first item was determined by investigators to be a wing fragment known as Flaperon from the passenger jet that disappeared in March of 2014. News and analysis at townhall.com. I'm Gordon Griffin. Dredging operations on the upper Hudson River in New York are winding down after 6 years and $1.5 billion. Some advocates are pushing for another round.
A coalition of environmental groups that unsuccessfully lobbied to prolong the PCB dredging before crews left the river last year are still pressing their case. This comes as the Environmental Protection Agency starts a key review of the massive Superfund cleanup. It's another chapter in a fight that's ebbed and flowed over decades about how to handle PCBs discharged into the river by General Electric. While some advocates say the river won't be truly clean unless dredge crews return, EPA officials are focusing on the progress made along the river.
Correspondent Jeremy House, a Denver spokeswoman, says that a crisis point's approaching regarding the health safety and welfare of those who continue to live outside on the streets and sidewalks. And to that end, Denver is about to put an end to homeless camps that have popped up around homeless shelters and in public. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Hi, this is Sue Blake from Powerhouse Solar. Like most people, you are probably considering how you're going to reduce your household expenses and make those dollars stretch a little further. At Powerhouse Solar, we specialize in helping people find peace in the chaos. By lowering their electric bills through solar energy, we put them back in control and help them save money. We design solar systems that lower your energy bills, give you a manageable monthly payment you can count on, and avoid the electric rate increases. If you want energy independence with a battery backup system, we do that too. Getting solar installed on your home or business is a smart way to combat rising energy bills, and choosing the superior quality of SunPower Solar is equally important. Powerhouse Solar, we're a premier dealer for SunPower. We choose to partner with SunPower because they are the strongest American solar manufacturing company with the best warranty and the most efficient solar panel in the world. Call Powerhouse Solar today at 275-5600 or learn more at powerhousesolar.com.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. You're entering the second phase of We the People Radio for this afternoon. Talking about wolves and the cost of them and the effect of them on cattle and ranchers and just all things in between.
Oh, yeah. There's much, much more cost involved with wolf kills than just the cost of the animal.
Yeah, people think it's just, the animal died.
Pay them for the animal and we'll call it even.
Yeah, except for the fact that they don't really pay for all of them and, yeah, all the things that go with.
All the stuff that goes along.
So we're here with John Williams, who is an associate professor, and I forget what the other thing was called. What was it called, John?
Just a county agent.
Oh, yeah, county agent. I guess I'm not familiar with that. And you're up at Oregon State University. And how long have you been studying this stuff anyway?
Well, 2008 is when we started, to do actually work on the research. I've actually been working with the ranchers on what might be the issues since 1996. So,
holy cow! So it isn't like you just stumbled into this when wolves became popular.
Well, or unpopular. I was
facetious popular. How long have they been talking about it? Because this is relatively new for most of us, and most people, there are a lot of folks who don't even know it's already happening, that they're basically reintroducing wolves that never belonged in North America. So the idea that they're endangered is stupid on the face of it, but this has been a little pipe dream of the environmental community for a long time.
Well, you know, that's the whether these are the right wolves or not, is a moot point in my mind. Now I do realize
once they're
that
here.
the people that wanted the wolves, worked diligently for decades to get them. And in 1996, they did get the wolf release in Montana and in Idaho. Oh, actually in Wyoming and Idaho, and they were already coming into Montana and they planted the Canadian gray wolves there, and there's a lot of debates. My county has lots of bumper stickers about the invaders from the north, the Canadian gray wolf. And yet, my point is there is an awful lot of issues around wolves, and it's a horribly important issue. I unfortunately have to agree with Mac Birkmeyer, who's the rancher that came in 1996 and said, this is going to be the biggest issue for livestock producers in his lifetime. And it has turned out to be that way, I believe. But it's the wolf that we're going to have for the rest of my life, probably most of your lives. And so, we can argue the point, but the way I'm a little more pragmatic in the sense of that train left the station. It's what we have. Right or wrong, and so we need to learn what we're dealing with. and figure out the best way to make sure that everybody understands what the impact is, and then find ways to, if you, I struggle to say mitigate because it's pretty difficult, but that's the effort.
Yeah, it's very difficult to mitigate, and at some point, make a mental note that we'd like to hear some of the deterrents, because a lot of the government deterrents are silly. I mean, they're just silly. Down here, they're talking about cans with rocks in them and little pieces of rags along your fence line. And I mean, you're talking, some of these cattle are in areas that stretches for hundreds of miles.
You're talking about fladry. They actually has a name for the little flags on the fence, and yeah, that's one of the deterrents that are there, and we can talk about that when you want to. So
all right, well, we can go wherever you'd like to at this point.
Well, I guess I'd like to get to the economics, we left off last time, and I was talking about, so when we find that a cow is agitated, and this, recognize that these cows that we tested to show there was a temperament change hadn't been around wolves for months, and yet the impact is still there. Now, like any other being, critter, or human, non-human, when a traumatic event occurs, then you have some people who get over it and go back to work the next day. And you have some people who never get over it. And so we know that as time goes by, the trauma of an event with a cow might be reduced over time. Probably never goes completely away, but the impact is reduced. But the reality is the wolves are out there every year, and so there's reoccurring events. And so I tried to put a paper together that talks about, so what is the economics? Because everybody, like you had said, well, everybody says, well, ranchers get compensated for their losses. Well, they get compensated for a confirmed wolf kill. And remember, the confirmed kills are those that you first find the carcass. And out in the mountains, the research out of Idaho says that you find one out of eight. If you're in close to home, if you're on private ground, if you're in areas where there isn't trees, that number will get a lot smaller. You know, you will find more and more and more of a percentage of them. But it's still not all of them. And we talked about a reduced conception rate. And I used a herd of 400 head to show as kind of an example. And if you lose 10% of your conception rate, if you go from a 95% conception rate to an 85% conception rate with 400 head of cows, that's 40 calves that you didn't have, that you didn't even have an opportunity to save. And the example I used is a little higher price than we had today. The cattle prices have dropped since June when I did this, but with a $2.40 calf, you know, that was $134 a head for every cow you owned, just due to the reduced conception rate because of the change to temperament and the demeanor of your cows.
Wow.
And of course, compare that to the depredations, with the average that we'd seen over in Idaho, out of 400 head, you might lose 15. And that's an average. The one rancher I was talking about, you know, his percentage was a little higher than that. But that's $50 a head for every cow that you own. So just the reduced conception rate is 2.5 times more than the depredation, and the depredation is really the only one that you would see compensation for. Another economic issue is weaning weight. Your calves just don't come in as heavy as they did because their mothers never seem to settle down. Research didn't show that they travel faster or further, but they just, it's the downtime. You never see those cows laying in the shade chewing their cud. And that's when the weight gain occurs. So you have maybe 35 or 40 pound lighter calf, and that's another $46. per head, not just on those that are impacted, but every cow you own, is a reduction of $46 or so. Then you have the increased expenses. Those were the reductions. And the first thing that we talk about is the ranchers tell us that the cows come in thinner in the fall than they used to without wolves. And they're coming in almost one body condition score lighter. And for those that aren't familiar with body condition score, we score the cows on how much fat they have and so forth. And if you can't see the ribs at all, that's probably a 6. And, you know, if they're still well covered and look nice, that's a 5. If you're seeing the ribs pretty prominently, you're down in the 4 range. And that means that your cows are too thin to calve healthy, in a healthy manner. We need them to be a body condition 5 when they start to calve. Around our neck of the woods, we start calving about the last week of February, maybe the third week of February, for sure by the 1st of March. And that means those cows come in late fall and they're 90 pounds lighter than they're supposed to be. Which means during the winter, instead of just keeping your cow at the same weight, it means you've got to get her to gain a pound a day. And that's very expensive in the wintertime. And that's another $56 towards your expenses. And then there's just time. And this was one that the ranchers weren't expecting necessarily. But the amount of time that they had to spend when the wolves showed up. The first thing is all the time spent meeting with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and learning what all the rules were and what they could and couldn't do and how they could do it and what they were supposed to do if they found a dead carcass and so forth. Massive amount of I'd call it meeting time. But on top of that, you have additional fences. Wolves get to running cows and they tear the fences down. Additional fence maintenance. You have a large additional amount of checking your cows. Grandpa used to take the cows out in the spring and arrange and turn them out and come back in the fall and gather them. Your dad probably went out, somewhere between once a month and once a week to check on them. And right now, before the wolves, our ranchers were somewhere between once and twice a week checking on the cows. Now they're 4 to 6 times a week out on the range checking. And you contemplate 50 miles to where your cows are grazing, and then it might be another hour up a pretty rough road to get there. That's just to get there, and then you got to have the checking time. It's a massive amount of additional time. And that's almost $92 a head of additional either hired help or rancher themselves management time. Because the wolves were in your herd. Then we had to kind of make an assumption somewhere, and we just made the assumption on this ranch that wolves were on the ranch where the cows were at year-round, 12 months a year. So that's kind of a worst-case scenario. But if you add it all up, the depredation, calf kills is $50. Reduced weaning weights is $46. The body condition score is $56. Reduced conception rates, $134, and the increased management's $92, $380 a head. And that's for every cow you own.
And what's a normal, what's that $380 out of normally? I know it's hard to say because they all weigh different things.
A calf would bring you normally about, with this price, with the $2.40 price and a 560-pound calf, which is what we have up in this country, that's a $1,344 calf, okay? But that doesn't take off all of your expenses yet. Doesn't take off your feeding cost and your range cost and your management cost, salt, doctoring, and all of those are the expenses that come off of that $1,300. So, you know, it's about 25% of the gross, which used to be,
wow,
return on investment and management, you know.
Well, I don't care what you're doing. You take 25% off. That is a gigantic bite. When we come back,
I don't know how you're planning on doing this, but we definitely want to talk about the cost and the just the toll it takes on the people. Because
okay.
we've talked a lot about the animals, and that's a given, although I think folks don't realize how much that is. But there's a huge cost on the people who live in this country and who take care of all of our livestock. It's a tough deal. So we will come right back. You're listening to We the People Radio. I do hope that you'll go to the website. We've got a ton of good information on there. We are Sundays on the West Coast and Mondays on the East Coast. All that information's there. WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted
a. You're listening to We the People on AM 1460, KCNR.
This is Carl and Linda Bott. Join us Monday through Friday from 7 to 9 a.m. for Free Fire Radio right here on KCNR 1460, your favorite talk radio station. On Monday, we welcome Enjoy the Magazine, The Store, The Empire. Find out what's going on in Northern California this month via Enjoy the Magazine and much more. What's happening with politics, local, regional, and national. All here, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460. Miss a day, miss a lot.
NorCal Limousine Services is a family-owned business right here in Redding. We offer beautiful limousines and sedans with rates starting as low as $55 per hour. Do you have kids? We have amazing birthday packages for as low as $150. Sure, they can jump around all day or enjoy a memorable birthday they will talk about for years to come with NorCal Limousine. Driving to any of the major airports from Redding can be a drag. Ride with us in style and avoid the long drive and parking fees. We service the Sacramento and San Francisco airports as well as all the cruise lines.
Hello, my name is Jamie, the owner of NorCal Limousine, and I have over 14 years in experience in the limousine industry. I know how to treat you right and will always be discreet. If you have never rented a limo before, you should give us a call at 276-8851. It's more affordable than you think and a whole lot more fun than driving yourself.
Like our Facebook, check out our Yelp reviews, and mention KCNR for additional savings. That's NorCal Limousine at 276-8851 or NorCalLimo.com. TCP 31143.
Getting old is never easy. Imagine what it must be like for an older animal to lose their home and be left in a kennel wondering if you'll ever know love and companionship again. At Haven Humane, older animals are hard to place but have so much to offer. If you crave unconditional love, check out the older animals and remember PAL's Fund is available to supplement the cost if you lack the funds to adopt a loving companion. PAL was an amazing deaf Dalmatian that lived the life we would wish for all of our animals. Haven continues to accept donations to PAL's Fund and continue PAL's legacy.
KCNR, 1460 AM. If we're not talking about it, it's probably not important. KCNR, 1460 AM.
Well, we gave all the cows away, and now the only horns around here today are the ones up on the grill of a genuine 59 Coupe de Ville. Now we call it the Cadillac Ranch. They're parking cars in the old beef patch. There's a bar in the barn and the place stays packed, yeah. Till the cows come home at Cadillac Ranch.
That's what we should have called the show, Cadillac Ranch. Good theme song. Thanks, Bob.
The solution to the cow problem.
Exactly. Oh, my goodness. Well, okay, John. So, what's the cost to? I guess I shouldn't say necessarily. I shouldn't limit it to monetary costs. I mean, what's the toll it takes on the people?
I can give you an experience just of what happened in Wallowa County, which is my home. When the wolves came here in 2010, it wasn't just the ranchers that were impacted. It was a cultural shift, and I would suggest that for approaching 2 years, all the coffee clutches, you know, the guys who meet at 10 o'clock in a restaurant and solve the problems of the world,
yeah,
or the ranchers who meet at 5 a.m. and have breakfast together before they go out, or the people in the, you know, early afternoon, whichever. It was 100% of the topic was wolves. Every now and then, you know, something exciting would occur, but within a day, it was back to the impact of the wolves. And it's devastating. It's depressing. There was a depression, and I'm talking about a psychological type of depression in the whole community. And of course, we're a small town. Our town's our biggest town in the county is 2,000, and we have a county of only 7,000. So it's a small, isolated communities, much like I traveled to MacArthur for the wolf presentation 1st of February back there. And, you know, it's a lot like the country I traveled through after I left Reading, so up in Northeast. And it was... it was impacting everybody. Then, of course, the ranchers were dealing with it as we've been talking about it. People are no longer feel safe to go out and let their kids play too far from the house, for example. And the young kids who have grown up either on ranches or like my kids with just 10 acres, we didn't worry about them. You got them home, and then they were out there somewhere as they were young kids, and they were outside, and they were healthy. And now mom has to be there. You can't send the cow dog like a lot of people. We used to put a lot of faith in our cow dogs that they could go with the kids, and if something happened, they would defend those kids.
Sure.
And because that was family, and. And then if something else happened, they would come home and tell you about it. And I mean, it may sound like Lassie, but it's the truth. You put a lot of faith in your good dogs. You can't do that anymore because a dog is an attractant to the wolves. There's only been, you know, two confirmed adult or wolf, human wolf attacks. One up in Canada where a young gentleman went out to look at a garbage dump in the middle of the winter, and the wolves had been frequenting there, and they attacked him and killed him. And the other was a young teacher up in an island up in Alaska that went out jogging by herself in the evening and got attacked. Those are confirmed. However many others are out there, I don't know. All I know is that when you are not allowed to protect your livestock, that was the feeling of despair. Even if you saw a wolf there, you legally weren't supposed to shoot it. That was as disarming as anything under these under the rules that we were living under. And that's one of the real keys to getting away from them being listed as an endangered species, is you begin to be able to take back the right to protect what's yours. And even though the rules aren't there in Oregon under phase two, under phase three, which is 7 breeding pairs for 3 consecutive years, and we're actually in our second year of that already, then we will be able to have a little bit more relaxed rules. Still very, very onerous, but it was just depressing. And one of the ranchers is the president of the, or chairman of the Wolf Committee for the Oregon Cattlemen's, told us, he says, you know, I used to look forward to the day I turned my cows out on the range as you know, that's a major accomplishment. I've nurtured these cows. I've calved them. I've got them up out of the mud, and I've made sure they sucked, and I've got them healthy, and I've vaccinated them and branded them. And this is, you know, this is graduation day. I take my cows and my still small calves, and I take them out and put them on the range. And he said, I have such a feeling of accomplishment, knowing that the hardest part of the year is gone. And he says, now I turn my cows out with tears in my eyes, knowing that I'm sending some of those out to be eaten by wolves. And he said, it takes all the joy out of turning your cows out on the range. And that's that psychological loss of freedom that the ranchers are telling me about. So,
yeah. How do you put a price tag on that?
Well, and you also have people who can't, they have operations that are small enough, they can't afford to hire somebody to ride, you know, in the night to keep an eye on the cattle, and so they wind up doing it themselves. So you have a lot of these folks that are getting up there in years, and they're killing themselves to keep their cows alive.
Or they try, yes. And human presence is one of the deterrents that's used. And you know, when we had our research We had our collar on a wolf, and we had the collars on the cows, and we were hopes of having an interaction, you know, a few times to be able to learn something. And when we said, if it's going off once every 15 minutes on the wolf and every 5 minutes on the cow, if they get within 500 meters of each other, that's an interaction because they can move so quickly. And we were in hopes of capturing something. We had 783 times that the 10 cows and the one of the 10 cows and the wolf interacted at 500 meters. That, for those of us that are old and never did get the metric system, that's a football field and an end zone, is 100 meters, so five times that. And so we narrowed it down, and we said, let's talk about just when they got within 100 meters. And that was 53 times. And 52 of those times were at night. Now, like you said, well, we're out here trying to protect our animals in the evenings. Well, a day rider is one of the things that non-lethal money can be spent on. And I look at my data and I keep scratching my head saying, what's the value of a day rider? Because they're out there at night. They're a nocturnal moving animal. And our research also shows that on this one wolf data that we have. And so sometimes there's, you know, the research is struggling with what the norm is out there when people say, well, get them in close to your house. Our data didn't show that help. Get your day rider out there. Well, I come to find out from the ranchers in Willamette County, they call him the mortician. He's looking for carcasses. He's not trying to stop, you know, movement. And so all of this effort, it takes its toll. And some of it you don't see for a couple of 3 years. People are hep up and they're doing it. And then they realize they have to do that the rest of their life, and it really starts to settle in.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I mean, it's one thing if it's, you know, it's like drought or something else that happens that you know is limited. It's not going to last forever. This
right.
is like 900 miles of bad road.
There's a couple other things that, you know, you asked earlier about how's the coyote population different than wolf, and That's a massive difference. We've had people who say, well, you've lived with coyotes, you've lived with bears, you've lived with cougars, you can live with the wolf. Well, not true. When we have a coyote problem, and if the population gets too high, we put in some traps, we get our neighbors out, we shoot them down, we get the population down in our local area of, say, you know, let's say a couple of thousand acres around you, and you've solved your coyote problem. But when you recognize that a wolf can travel up to 30 to 35 miles a day easily. Our wolf averaged 11 miles a day and moved up to 28 miles in one day. We had a wolf who while the pups were in the den, traveled 30 miles in 6 hours.
Wow.
And his collar was set to go off every 6 hours. And when the pups are in the den, they get fed by the males or all the other animals in the pack, go out, kill, eat, stuff themselves full, run back to the den as fast as they can and upchuck that. And that's how the female and the pups eat for the first 6 weeks. And so here he was, he killed an elk, he gorged himself, his collar went off, and 6 hours later it went off at the den. So the scale of what you have to understand about wolves is so massively different. You really have to take a step back and say, when that wolf that's down there next to you guys, or the wolf that you have there left our county, he was less than 2 weeks getting there. And then he stayed. And so a 500-mile walkabout on a wolf in a 2-week time frame is not out of line. So you got to change the scale, and that's also one of the frustrating things is you think you might be able to do something about it, but it's such a big picture. You know, even though you got that download from ODF&W this morning, he might be 20 miles from there or 30 miles from there by now.
Yeah.
Clear across the county.
They're not just, you know, for the people who are kind of still a little clueless about some of the wild animals. Wolves kill for three things, you know, to feed themselves. They kill for sport, and they also kill to teach their young. So there's a lot of killing, you know, a little extra killing than some other animals. Some other animals, you know, well, they're just trying to feed themselves. Well, not so much.
Not really.
Yeah, there's a little
not always.
Nah, that lives a little extra for these guys. We need to take a really quick break, and when we come back, talk to us a little bit about some of these goofy deterrents. Now that we've talked about things that actually work that are incredibly stressful, expensive, and often not available, the state and the environmental community has all sorts of nutty ideas we should let people know about. Be right back.
You're listening to We the People on Community Talk Radio for the North State, AM 1460 KCNR.
Kyle DeFore from Mighty Fine Foods in Bella Vista here. We'd like to thank our local community for making 2015 our best year yet. Your continued patronage supports 20 local jobs, and when you shop at Mighty Fine, your money stays in your community the way it should be. Daily deli specials under $5, a different hot soup served daily, groceries, meat, produce, and over 1,000 cold drinks. Mighty Fine Foods is your locally owned and operated neighborhood grocer. Mighty Fine, $2.99 in Deschutes in beautiful Bella Vista.
It's the Ron Largent Show, talking about Reading. Our great community sponsors are Russell Cleaning Service, the Shasta Athletic Club, Zach Bay State Farm Insurance, Revolve Solar, Gold Star Mortgage, Trinity Termite, Chronic Service Master, and Authority Property Management. Great community members every Saturday morning at 9 o'clock to hear what's going on. Many interesting topics. Our goal is to inform. So tune in each Saturday at 9 to keep informed. The Ron Largent Show. It's the happening place.
Hi, I'm Chuck Kinney, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. There's a joke around our company that our propane is better than other companies' propane. The fact is that most propane sold in the North State is manufactured in the same refineries in the Bay Area, so there's really no difference. However, there can be a big difference between propane companies. When you call Shasta Gas, you will be greeted by a friendly, knowledgeable customer service representative that will answer your questions or concerns and even give you an approximate time that your delivery will be there if you need to know. If you want, you can also talk to the owner, me. There may also be a big difference in prices between companies. Our motto at Shasta Gas is our customers are warm friends. So for safety, service, and savings, and to experience this difference, give us a call at 365-3793. That's 365-3793.
If you are running your own business, you already know that if there are 1,000 items on your to-do list, you really have 3,000 things to get done. Success in business is in the details. You need help. Let the smart professionals at Five Star Bank help you take care of those financial details. Yes, smart people doing good business. Life is 10% of what happens to us and 90% of how we react to it. Be positive. Those at the top of the mountain did not fall there. Visit us at Five Star Bank and let us show you how we specialize in emerging business and commercial real estate. Five Star Bank also specializes in hard work, working hard for those that believe that success is just on the other side of the next opportunity. Thomas Jefferson was a great believer in opportunity, for he found that the harder he worked, the more he had of it. Your time is as valuable as your success. So visit us at Five Star Bank, 358 Hartnell in Reading, or call Eric Woodstrom at 223-6652. Online at fivestarbank.com. Five Star Bank, professional, progressive, and personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Hi, this is Kyle DeFore with the NorCal Sports Hour. Tune in every Tuesday at 6 here on KCNR 1460 for all things Warriors, Kings, A's, Giants, Niners, and Raiders, as well as all your local high school standouts. Get your NorCal Sports Fix every Tuesday at 6 on the NorCal Sports Hour here on KCNR 1460 and KCNR1460.com.
This is Carl and Linda Bott. Join us Monday through Friday from 7 to 9 a.m. for Free Fire Radio right here on KCNR 1460, your favorite talk radio station. On Monday, we welcome Enjoy the Magazine, The Store, The Empire. Find out what's going on in Northern California this month via Enjoy the Magazine and much more. What's happening with politics, local, regional, and national. All here, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460. Miss a day, miss a lot.
KCNR, 1460 AM, the most local programming in Northern California.
Who's afraid of the big bad wolf? The big bad wolf, the big bad wolf. Who's afraid of the big bad wolf? Tra-la-la-la-la. Long ago there were three pigs, little handsome pigs. For the big, very bad wolf, they did not give three figs. And number one was very gay, and he built his house with
hay. Can you say that?
With a hey, toot, he blew on a snoot, and he played
around. How politically incorrect can you get, Bob?
Now number two was fond of jigsaw, so he built
a snarky song about the
I'm
three
sure
wolves.
Barbara Streisand regrets that.
It's kind of funny we were talking about that.
I shall build my house with bricks. He had no chance to sing or dance, cause work and play don't mix.
We were just talking about that, the politically incorrect. Bill wanted to know if the collars had to be, rainbow colored, or what were we going to do in California, with the transgender wolves and all that.
Gender neutral colors.
We need gender neutral colors. That's, that was it.
Yeah, just in
these
California,
are the things that,
yeah.
This is the research that we're into.
In California.
John. This is the scrutiny we bring to the topic, so obviously we completely need you because we're so easily distracted. Not good. Okay, so talk about some of the deterrents that just make
me
non-lethal, crazy. Yeah.
What they call them, okay. We usually talk about four or five different kinds. The first one is flattery, and you alluded to that. It's an electrical wire with red flags on it, and the flags are, about 16 inches apart and maybe a foot long, and they blow in the wind. And you put those up around places where you have very, very, very tight control. So maybe in a close calving pen, if you have one on your ranch, more of a sheep operation, if you bring your sheep in at night and you're wanting to put that up around the outside. And if it can either be electrified or not electrified, so it's a one-strand electric wire, that works without being electrified. For when it works up to about 60 days. And they say if you electrify it, it might work for 90 days. And what I suspicion, and I've never been told this, but the people who propose to use this, they haven't told me whether if you use it for 60 days this winter, whether it gets a new 60 days next winter or not. What I have read and heard, it's my opinion that is a tool. Like I said, very limited use around lambing, calving, where you're in on tight quarters, and for a limited amount of time. And while it's up, it works on some of the wolves all of the time. Now, this is my opinion. It works on some of the wolves some of the time, and on some of the wolves none of the time. So if you think it's going to solve the problem, it's not. But it's a tool that might allow you to reduce some impact somewhere in very, very isolated situations. A second one is called a rag box. That's where they get a big toolbox, big plastic toolbox, and they put a flashing light on top of it and a couple of speakers out in front and hook it to an MP3 player inside, and they hook it to a receiver, and if one of the collared wolves gets close to this box, then it goes off. And they've got every sound known to man on this MP3 player that goes off. We're talking sirens, whistles, helicopters, chainsaws, shotguns, rap music.
Well, I bet that scares the hell out of them.
It's one of the most effective sounds to try to deter the wolf. What my producers have told me, and we have two of these in the county, is that they... It keeps them up at night because it goes off for almost any reason, and very seldom is there a wolf with a collar that actually sets it off.
Oh, great.
But wind will set it off, rain will set it off, you know, some sort of other sound or another animal. And so it tends to do a really good job of keeping the producer up and not real good on helping keep the wolves away.
So, well, and people think we're mean to people in Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah.
You know, if we did this kind of stuff to the folks in Guantanamo, we'd be in trouble. We'd have hearings in Congress.
So the third thing is the clean up bone piles, and that actually works. You don't need an attractant around. You know, all ranches, the place you used to just drag your dead animals up far enough away from any human habitation that then the wildlife could take care of it and clean it up for you. And now that attracts the wolves into your neck of the woods. And even burying it, we buried ours the first when we first started, and they dug down through 18 inches of dirt to get to the bone piles that were old and leached. So that's something that you can do that helps, is quit having bone piles. And so what do you do with your dead carcasses? Our county commissioners opened up the dump to delivery of carcasses. Now, your dump has to be certified to take carcass. Ours was. The ranchers got it opened up. The producer, the commissioners, were more than happy to do that, and they didn't even pour salt in the wound. You know, you lose your $2,000 cow, and then they don't charge you an extra $25 to dump her. If you're coming in with a dead carcass, there's no charge to it. So that is something that you could do ahead of time, get a hold of your commissioners and find out if their dump is certified to take carcasses, and if not, maybe they should start working on it.
Well, it's interesting because, see, we don't have any landfills anymore.
And so what do you do with your garbage?
I think we're taking landfill stuff to, like, Nevada or something.
Okay.
I mean, it's obviously extremely cost efficient.
Sure, I would work with my commissioners on what I might do with my. They may need to create a place where they collectively can put their carcasses. And in fact, there's quite a bit of research that shows how you can compost carcasses and break them down rather quickly. So, be another shot. Day Rider, I talked about a little earlier. And that's just basically called human presence, and human presence works. When you're there, the wolf will tend to not be there. It has no spatial and no temporal residual, and so if you're there, and I don't know how far away it will deter a wolf, but not real far. Let's say somewhere between a quarter and a half a mile. It might keep that wolf back. But if you're sitting out there protecting your livestock and you drink coffee and then you have to go get rid of your coffee, there's no residual for that 5 minutes you're gone. They may well come in and attack in a five-minute time frame. And of course, distance-wise, you're not very far out. And on open range, obviously, that doesn't work. We were successful 1 year to move the wolves off of our producers that had been being hit hard, and we spent quite a bit of money with the riders, and we moved the wolves. And at MacArthur, there was a non-lethal discussion about a group up in Montana that was successfully not having wolf kills by the human presence process and mob grazing and so forth. And I asked the researcher afterwards, and I said, what about the neighboring ranches or the ranches around there? And he said, we've been checking and there isn't any effect on those. And I said, how far are you checking? And he said, well, next door. And I said, well, we were successful in moving our wolves one summer, and then they came back in the fall with the human presence. But we moved them 100 miles away.
Now, how did you move them? Using those techniques?
Just using having people out there always protecting our livestock in that let's say 10,000 or 20,000 acre area.
Okay.
And the wolves just decided that they were, you know, harassed enough that they went over the hill.
Right.
90 miles away, and the rancher over there got the same number of kills as we did here. So the reality is we spent a lot of public money moving who got hit that summer. We didn't stop the kills. We just changed who got hurt.
See, and
that's the sad part, is those wolves are going to eat every day. And then the other thing, the other non-lethal that we talk about is management changes. If there's a den in your pasture, don't turn your cows out there. But that's a cost to it. Then I have to go rent pasture somewhere else and things like that. So those are the non-lethal.
Let's come back and do the other ones after we take one last quick break. Yeah, a lot of these are not really all that cost efficient, I think, as people are finding out, and they're not always they don't always work. Anyway, we'll be right back with John Williams. We're talking about wolves today on We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
And you're listening to We the People on AM 1460 KCNR.
Back on Brew, located at 2143 Hilltop Drive, offers the best in coffee and other drinks at Espresso Joe's. Lattes, cappuccinos, espressos, tea, and much more are offered at great prices and even better taste. Walk next door to the finest tobacco emporium in Northern California. That includes all types of tobacco and accessories, and a walk-in humidor that is awesome with variety and taste. Tobacco and Brew, a better-known business that supports our community. 2143 Hilltop Drive, open 7 days a week. Tobacco and Brew.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Hi, this is Sue Blake from Powerhouse Solar. Like most people, you are probably considering how you're going to reduce your household expenses and make those dollars stretch a little further. At Powerhouse Solar, we specialize in helping people find peace in the chaos. By lowering their electric bills through solar energy, we put them back in control and help them save money. We design solar systems that lower your energy bills, give you a manageable monthly payment you can count on, and avoid the electric rate increases. If you want energy independence with a battery backup system, we do that too. Getting solar installed on your home or business is a smart way to combat rising energy bills, and choosing the superior quality of SunPower Solar is equally important. Powerhouse Solar, we're a premier dealer for SunPower. We choose to partner with SunPower because they are the strongest American solar manufacturing company with the best warranty and the most efficient solar panel in the world. Call Powerhouse Solar today at 275-5600 or learn more at powerhousesolar.com.
National news with a local view. KCNR, 1460 AM.
All right. When the wolf man.
Catch you in the park, walking in the dark. That's for you, Bill.
Yikes.
Todd Rundgren's tribute to Wolfman Jack.
Classic. Yeah, I remember when Wolfman Jack was fun, because we didn't have wolves. We thought that was fun. Those were the days. Okay, so we talked about some of these, you know, rags and all these different things. And down here they're talking about flashing lights. That you can't do any of that on really large areas, and you're not at liberty to do that on public land if you graze on public land, right?
Oh, you could, but it wouldn't do any good. I mean, you'd have to gather your cows up, and that's contrary to what we would want on management. So
yeah, I mean, you're looking at kind of messing up the way grazing is actually. Grazing benefits the land if it's done properly, and this looks like we're going to bunch everybody up and you know, really utilize the land improperly.
That's correct.
Hmm.
I sent you one last document, and it's called The Wolf Attack. And before we run completely out of time, it's something that people ought to read. The guy that came to me in 96 had a 250-head of pregnant cows within 5 miles of town, on flat ground, no trees, or at rolling hills, the Zumwalt Prairie. And wolves came in and attacked that one night. There was no blood, there was no loss, and it was 1 month from calving. And you talk about expense and trauma and emotional loss. You can read about what Mac Verkmeyer and his family had to put up with, backwards calves, upside down calves, twisted around calves, calves that were legs were back, and everything at that time. And it's another expense, another cost, both emotional and economic that we haven't really talked about today, and what that wolf did in one night. So it's on your website. You've got it posted, called Wolf Attack, A Cowman's Worst Nightmare. And he wrote that himself, so that's worth looking at.
It was a good, I mean, it was a sad story, but it was, you know, well written. I would encourage people to read that too. In the last couple minutes here, what else would you share with people, especially folks that are not familiar with life in, say, areas where you live? You know, people who would live in a city and that sort of thing that have potentially supported the reintroduction of wolves.
There was a book written by Amy Lynn Eaton, and she wrote a book called Collared, and it was just about the politics and the facts as wolves first moved into Oregon. Might be really good for your research or your people, whether they're in town or not. But one of the comments she wrote was, the closer people live to wolves, the less likely they are to feel positive towards the species. And that's, you know, she didn't come in with a preconceived notion. That's what she learned in studying people. And so these wolves are liked by people that don't have to live around them, and disliked like by people that do. And that's a telling story to me. And like I said, we try to just keep getting the research to try to help producers know, learn about them. Knowledge is useful. But we also need to recognize that the people who are not dealing with them on a daily basis, really getting down and understanding what the impacts are to a whole community, not just ranchers, the whole community.
Well, it's a lot like, I mean, it's a lot like in the urban areas when we make stupid laws that turn felonies into misdemeanors, like they've done here in California with Prop 47, then you have a huge increase in crime. People start realizing, well, hey, maybe this wasn't so good. It was nice to be benevolent, but, you know, there's a huge cost. Two-legged or four-legged, predators are predators.
And the cost isn't distributed between those who want the wolves and those who are having to spend the time and the energy and the money on them.
Yeah, that's exactly. Right.
Well, thank you very much, John, for coming on. It's been quite enlightening.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
We really like to keep up with your research because so often this becomes an opinion topic, and it's good for people to get all the facts. Thank you so much.
You bet.
Alrighty, so folks, I hope you send the show to your friends and family, post it on Facebook, join us on Twitter. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
KCNR, Shasta Redding.
Gate of the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library and Museum in Simi Valley, California. People are leaving them in tribute to Nancy Reagan. The library is closed. Visitors are being turned away. Meanwhile, at her home church, the Reverend Drew Sams, senior pastor of Bel Air Presbyterian Church, says that Nancy Reagan has gone to be with God.
We as fellow believers in Christ can rejoice on one hand and grieve in a different way because we know that Nancy is in the presence of the one that she has served.
The former First Lady died today at the age of 94. A spokeswoman for Jimmy Carter says that the former president doesn't need further treatment for cancer. Carter apparently shared the good news today with those attending one of his regular Sunday school lessons at Maranatha Baptist Church in Carter's hometown of Plains, Georgia. His spokeswoman says that doctors will continue to perform scans on the 91-year-old to ensure that cancer has not returned.